books, I guess we'll get started. Welcome and thank you for coming to our DTV Countdown 1 year out, brought to you by the Progress and Freedom Foundation, with generous support from our members and viewers like you. I'm Ken Faree, and I'm your host for the event today. I would be remiss if I didn't offer to some of you who may not know anything about the Progress and Freedom Foundation or much about it. I'm happy to talk with you afterwards or visit our website at pff.org. And for those of you who do know about the foundation, please remember to mark your calendars for Aspen 2008, August 17th through the 19th, in Aspen, Colorado, of course. Now, as most of you in this room probably know, we are going to do what may be the most ambitious technological transition in the nation's history about 1 year from today. And yet there remains a number of things, I understand, for the broadcasters to do to be technically ready to flip the switch a year from now. There still are some unresolved policy questions, particularly revolving around low-power television. There still seems to be a fairly wide gap in consumer knowledge about the DTV transition, if not awareness of it. And for those of us who have been following issues surrounding the transition for some time, we're always looking for sort of cracks in the political foundation that may bring the whole edifice crashing down at the last minute, and hoping that we don't find them, like the inspectors at the dam, right, looking for the little sign of some weakness. The presenters on the panel today have a wide variety of views and perspectives on these and other issues surrounding the transition today, so I'm hoping we'll have an informative and provocative discussion. But we're going to start. The Acting Assistant Secretary of Commerce and Director of the NTIA, Meredith Baker, has graciously agreed to make some opening remarks to kick us off. She can't stay, unfortunately, for the duration, but I thank her for coming. And by the way, biographical information for all of these folks is provided in your materials as well, so I'm not going to do a long biographical rehash. But thank you. I'll turn this over to the Acting Assistant Secretary.
Thank you, Ken. I do not have really prepared remarks because I just wanted to I said, Tony, what should I say today? And he goes, you just need to thank the heck out of everybody. And so my first comment is, who remembers the Faree plan? So I want to thank Ken because I wouldn't be standing here if the Faree plan hadn't originally thrown around the fact that we needed to have a digital transition and really I think when Ken and John Cody came over to NTIA, Mike Gallagher was the assistant secretary, and they said, we need to do this. This is so important for America. It's so important for the next generation of innovation and our competitiveness around the world, and it's really important for the first responders, and this is how we can do it. Well, we didn't exactly – Congress didn't exactly do it the way that you had outlined, Ken, but they did do it, and now I'm hawking coupons, and that is what we're doing over at NTIA. So I actually can pass this around if you think that's worthwhile. This is we did a trial here in D.C. on the coupon program and recently concluded the trial. And so this was the sample. Actually, my coupon's already been used. I used it at Best Buy. But this is what it looks like. This is what the coupon looks like, and then you'll get the list of participating retailers that are in your area. In the back is just question and answers and the list of the boxes that are actually certified. So just because I think it's interesting to see, kind of hands-on what is actually going to come to your mailbox. My guess is everyone in this room probably applied whether they needed the coupon or whether they're going to use it or not, which is why I think I'm going to give you these most updated numbers of applications, but I think what's really going to be interesting is the redemption rate, because I know that I, for one, actually applied for a coupon, and I have all digital televisions in my house. I did it because I was curious, as I'm sure Paul probably did too. Many of those in the room probably did. So today, let's see, our numbers today are 2,869,743 applications for 4,959,816 coupons. You can see that most people are ordering two, except for all of us who probably ordered one. we are at about 22% of the funding of the original Phase 1 funding. We're about 22% through that. We have... interestingly enough, I think 64% are applying through the web and 35% on the telephones. You know, we have English and Spanish operators. We have a Spanish IVR that's recently gone up. I think originally we've had great partnership with Univision, and a lot of our Hispanic outreach has gotten the word out so much that we have had a lot of Hispanic and Spanish speakers calling. So we've added more Spanish language operators, and now we have the Spanish language IVR. Tony, our expert here in consumer education, can kind of outline a little bit more in detail what we're doing as far as consumer outreach goes. But the numbers are good. We're really pleased with the education efforts that so many people actually know about the program. I think that's what's important. I call on everyone here to be ambassadors of the DTV program. If you have a member, make sure that they have a link to our website. If you I see a lot of lobbyists in the crowd. You can do that too. I mean, but really, what I think this is important, we can do as much as we can from Washington up here, but we really need this to be a grassroots level. Television is personal. I was speaking to a group of seniors the other day, and, you know, I finished the whole, you know, well, you need to do this if you are an over-the-air, free broadcast, you know, yeah, I kind of walked through. If you have cable or satellite or some other pay televisions, you don't need this coupon. If you have a digital television or you've recently bought a television, then it might be digital. You know, you should call and we can check. As soon as I finished, 50 hands go up and they're like, I have cable. Do I need that? So it's really personal, and I think you need to, you know, talk, you know, we are lucky. We kind of understand this program here in Washington, those of us who are intimately acquainted with it. And so go to your church groups, go to your schools, go to your neighbors, help your parents. This is something that really is good for America, and it's important that we're doing it. And there are some, we're working through the details, but it's going to happen, Ken. It's going to happen. And I think we're all going to be proud. It might be one of the most important things that any of us ever do in our lives. So I am grateful to PFF for having this session here. I'm grateful to all of you for paying attention and caring. And I look forward to this date, really, almost this date a year for now, when we go digital. And then NTIA, just for the record, will continue to be giving out coupons till March 31st, 2009. And I really thank you. If you need us for a town hall meeting, or if you need us for any sort of information for any of your groups, we have booth. We'll travel. We've got a lot of information up on the web about it. As you know, I think we're going to start mailing out coupons this coming week. We have a pretty big backlog. we're going to start mailing them out and see how the systems work, and we're going to be monitoring it really carefully. We want to make sure that there are boxes on the shelves when the coupons go out. So we are grateful to our retailer participants. We have certified 619 retailers. Not all of them are yet participating, so we are looking forward to them getting the inventory on the boxes and getting their sales force trained. Right now we have Walmart, Best Buy, Circuit City, and Radio Shack who are going to be participating in these first weeks. And as the merchandise and the boxes get out there, we'll have more retailers participating. Obviously, you know, with 619 certified, we look forward to a lot more participating. There'll be consumers. We're trying to make this as easy as possible for consumers. They can apply online. They can buy their boxes online using the coupon. They can buy them at the stores, and there'll be phone numbers for both, at least for now, Radio Shack and Best Buy will be able to call. So I've been up since 6 hitting the media rounds, and so I'm sorry I'm kind of rambling, but really I think Tony summed it up when he said just thank the heck out of them. So I really thank all of you for your interest and your participation, and I look forward to the coupon program rolling out smoothly and we can work through all these other details, because it's important and it's important for America. So ask all your questions to Tony. And thanks very much.
I think you just wanted to make sure I get the blame for this thing. Before you go, Meredith, I have an analog TV here, and I want my coupon. All right, I want my converter box for this thing. Okay. It's quite a TV, isn't it? How about that? Oh, it's not going to work. No, this is not going to work after the transition. What do you think I should do with it?
Get one of these.
For this?
I don't know if it'll
this was like for like the game, you know, to sit when you're at the football game and. Yeah. Anyway.
If you're at the football game, why are you?
Because I'd rather watch it on a 4-inch screen, actually.
Watch it in real life.
He's getting old and can't remember the replays.
Okay, well, we'll start the panel discussion now. And we're going to begin with Rick Chesson. Again, biographical information is in the materials at the front desk, but Rick is currently the senior legal advisor to Commissioner Copps at the FCC. When I was at the FCC, Rick was in charge of our DTV task force there, but I know that even though he has since been elevated to the rarefied air of the eighth floor, he remains engaged in these issues and I think can speak authoritatively about the FCC's role in this glide path to February of 2009. So, Rick.
Thanks. That's on. Okay. Well, should we move this, or is this okay? Can people see okay? It's a pleasure to be here a year out. Oh, I think the song and rent is 525,600 minutes, and I'm afraid we're going to need every last one of them to get this done, because it's a daunting task, I think, in front of us. One of the things that makes it daunting is how many moving parts there still are. This is an incredibly complicated transition, and we still have a lot of things out there that need to happen. One of them, and we'll talk more about this, broadcasters. We're not done with the broadcaster build-out yet. We still have hundreds of broadcasters who still have some significant work to do to be ready. We still have the table, the final DTV table. We still have over 100 reconsideration petitions. Hopefully we'll act on those soon so that people can know where they're going to ultimately end up. DBS and cable operators are out there scrambling. And all the DBS folks are traveling around the country trying to get their reception capabilities ready for February of 2009 because they need to do upgrades to their receive sites to be ready. And of course, consumers, I'm sure we'll talk a lot about that. There's a lot of consumer awareness is increasing, but confusion is still rampant out there. And there's still a lack of coordinated government effort here. New questions keep popping up, and sometimes we say, well, gee, where did that come from? And I think that if there were a coordinated effort designed to identify these problems, a lot of these could have become seen the light of day earlier. So it's not that any one of those particular problems is we couldn't deal with, but it's just that so many issues are still in flux that we have to really focus over the next year to make sure that we can get this right. And the second thing that makes this kind of complicated is the fact that we're dealing with television and we're dealing with a hard deadline. We have a year and we don't have the authority to extend that year. And we're talking about television, which, as all of you know, who've probably lived through some of the things that have happened, you know, over the last few years when people are deprived of their television. That's a serious matter, and there's nothing that will get people riled up more than losing television, even if it's one channel, and we're talking about people maybe losing their over-the-air service altogether. So this is important, and there's a hard deadline. It's important not only to viewers who are potentially going to lose service, but keeping that deadline is important for other stakeholders like the public safety community out there waiting for the spectrum to open up. It's people bidding on the 700 megahertz spectrum right now who are counting on this deadline. So we have one chance here, and we really have to buckle down. I think this is, Commissioner Copps has been saying this for a long time now, that we really need to treat this like the national priority that it is and devote the resources and coordination and have the accountability that we need to make sure that we get this right, because there's no mulligans here. So I think Commissioner Copps has said that it's late, but hopefully not too late to get this done. And let me talk about some of the main areas of concern that we think ought to be focused on, Commissioner Copps thinks ought to be focused on. One, as I mentioned briefly, is this national commitment, and I think he was very pleased to see the letter from Chairman Dingell and Chairman Inouye a few days ago to the President asking that the White House assemble a federal interagency task force headed by the FCC. It's exactly the kind of effort that's needed. Commissioner Copps participated in the Y2K effort, and that was the kind of federal interagency coordination that you really need, where people met daily. There was accountability, and there was coordination, and there was a clear place for the industry to coordinate, and problems were discussed and identified and dealt with in a coordinated way, and you sort of knew who was reaching out to whom, and you sort of knew what the effort was, and you were all on the same page. And hopefully that will lead to that same kind of effort here. The second issue is consumer education. And right now I think we do see a rising level of awareness, but still really high levels of consumer confusion about what they need to do. And as Meredith said, this is a very personal thing for people. And so a lot of people probably have heard or starting to hear maybe that there's this thing coming called the DTV transition. What does that mean? What do I have to do? Does this affect me? And there's all sorts of specific issues that people have to deal with, not only my cable or satellite. What if I'm a satellite subscriber, but I'm in a non-local to local area? Well, that means you're not getting your signals over the satellite, and you probably will need a converter box. What if I have a rabbit ears antenna? A lot of people have just a regular old little rabbit ear sitting on the top of their TV set. They may need a new antenna, because now a rabbit ear antenna is just for receiving VHF, and so a lot of people in the analog world receive VHF, and they were perfectly happy getting their picture. But now in the digital world, a lot of those are going to be on the UHF band, and so they may need a new antenna, or they may need a new antenna for other reasons possibly, and we can talk about that too. So you've got sort of those specific education issues. Another one that I've never seen, I don't think, discussed in ads here is VCRs. And what if somebody wants to record one show, they have it set up so they can record, they have a splitter, they want to record one thing while watching another. They actually may need two converter boxes in that situation if they want to continue to do that, because the converter box will just feed out one signal. So if you're, so it does get into people's specific situations and their specific setups, and I think how you educate people, how you bring them along is a real challenge. And it goes beyond just impressions, which I see a lot of talk about impressions. We got a zillion impressions. But the question is, what are people understanding, and what are their plans? And if you look at sort of what the UK has been doing, they're still above, they're transitioning on a regional basis, basically, and through 2012 they're finishing up. Already they're ahead of us in awareness still, even though our numbers have come up. But they've been really tracking people's plans, their understanding, what are they going to do, what are their attitudes about the transition, are they prepared, how do they plan to prepare, things that I haven't really seen that we've been doing here. So we need, because this isn't just about understanding, it's not just that people are aware a transition is coming, we need them to do something. They need to actually take some action in this transition. We need to know, are we reaching the right people? Are we reaching them with the right messages? Are the messages coordinated? Which messages are working? Which messages aren't working? And so that we can adjust as we go and make sure that no one is really left behind here. The third thing is getting broadcasters ready. And there we have about 600 broadcast stations still with some major work to do before the end of the transition. I think about 1,100 or so are pretty much ready to go, or 800 are ready to go, and 1,100 will be ready to go, hopefully shortly. But 600 have some major work to do, probably mostly changing channels. They've had a temporary DTV channel, and they're going to be moving back to their analog channel. And so there you've got an incredible sort of a dance, and a very elaborate dance, I guess, over the next year between people with construction crews and equipment arriving and tower work happening. And sometimes multiple stations have their antennas on the same towers, and so you've got to coordinate. And you're talking about sometimes taking down an analog antenna for a while so you can move a digital antenna. And are people going to, viewers in that area going to understand when those analog signals go off the air for a little while because they have to move the antenna down? It's going to start soon. It's going to start before the end of the year. It's probably going to start this summer. You're going to start to see people preparing themselves, hopefully. I mean, this is the way it's got to happen. There's only a limited number of tower crews. Every tower crew can't be everywhere on February 16th, 2009. In a lot of areas of the country, the weather won't permit it. So you're talking about starting this summer. There's going to be a lot of movement and things happening, and that's another consumer education issue, but it's also something that has to be coordinated because, you know, construction, sometimes there's delays, and what happens when, you know, the tower crew was supposed to show up at the next place, and there's a ripple effect, obviously, down the line, and how this happens is going to be something that we'll need to watch very closely. Thankfully, we've got a form coming to the FCC next week that every broadcast station has to file that will tell us a lot of information we don't have, where every station is in the process. Are they ready to go? Are they not ready to go? If they're not ready to go, what do they need to get ready to go? And how do they plan to get there? And what's their schedule for being able to be ready in February of 2009? I think that's going to be a very important form for us to see what's actually happening out there. And fourth, the last steps. There's this last bit. I mean, even if we do it right, consumers know about the transition, they go out and get their converter box, they bring it home, are they going to be able to hook it up? And who's going to have problems hooking it up? Again, in the UK, they do have an assistance program for certain elderly and disabled people. We don't have anything like that here. I am concerned about that. I've got the quick start guide here for putting up in a converter. It's two pages for attaching a converter box. And I think that, you know, again, I think a lot of the folks in this room wouldn't have any problem with it, but I think some people are going to find it a little challenging. One of the things is if you have an antenna that hooks through thin, flat wire, one of these kind of antennas, you may need a adapter, which I didn't even realize until I looked at that. You made an adapter for that kind of antenna to hook to your converter box. One positive thing I heard about was that Best Buy apparently is having their geek squads go out and actually train local community organizations on how to help people install these. And I think that kind of thing is really the kind of steps that we need to see. And finally, I know you probably heard Commissioner Copps really believes that that we should have had a test market, one or more test markets first, to see what the problems were, try to identify them, hopefully work them out ahead of time. This is something other countries are doing, something in the Consumers Union, I know what their testimony just supported the other day. It's something that just makes all the sense in the world to try to see what the problems are before we launch this nationwide. A lot of the problems we're talking about and we'll talk about could be identified and worked out on a smaller scale before we throw the switch all at once on February 17, 2009, because everything won't go exactly as we anticipate. So the more things we can identify up front and the more lessons we can learn up front, the better off we'll be. So thanks, and I'll look forward to your discussion.
Thank you. The gentleman's time has expired anyway. And thanks for those uplifting comments, by the way. That was I see you've
Mr. Sunshine.
Completely bought into the cops' sort of doom and gloom view of the world, right? Well, for a more, hopefully more optimistic...
Call it realistic.
More optimistic perspective on things. I'm going to ask Tony now to say a few words. Tony Wilhelm's bio also is in the materials. You'll see he's had a long and distinguished career within the machinery of the federal policymaking works. Currently, he is the director of the Consumer Education, Public Information, and Converters Set-Top Box Program or something like that. He's essentially probably the single most important guy on the federal agency level for this last year of the transition. So when you're looking for someone to blame at the end, don't look here. We just started this thing. It's really this guy down here. So, Tony, with that?
All right.
Fair enough.
Thanks, Ken. I want to ask everyone a question to start off. Who pocketed the coupon that Meredith circulated? Okay, you've got it in the back there. Good thing about that is there's no stored value on these coupons, and so actually you couldn't take it to buy, you know, a loaf of bread or a new DVD. You can only use that card for a certified converter box. But Meredith covered a lot of the important details and very well. So let me just hit some of the things that she didn't mention on. Again, 5 million coupons out of the gate. We're very we're a very small agency, but have a tall task. We think we're up for that task. It's a critical piece of the DTV transition, this converter box coupon program. And I'm here to say that we're off to a very strong start. 5 million coupons, 2.6 million households have successfully completed the application process. I went online and did, actually over the phone, I did mine. It took me 90 seconds. So I'd love to hear about another government program where it takes 90 seconds to apply for a government benefit. So maybe you guys have similar experiences, but 2.6 million households completed this process probably without a whole lot of pain and confusion. Consumer education is obviously critical, as Ken mentioned. We're very pleased to be participating with industry, other federal agencies, and nonprofit groups to make this transition a success. All told, we've had over $1 billion in commitments from these groups, these stakeholders. Obviously, from the affected industries, we have strong commitments from the NAB, NCTA, and the CEA, among others. We're in close coordination with these groups through the DTV Transition Coalition. I hope some of you have the time to attend meetings that they have regularly at the NAB. It's an organization of over 200 entities that their job is basically to coordinate the consumer education. We're a part of that. We've been there since the beginning, NTIA as well as the FCC. So we have very close coordination with industry in terms of our messaging, knowing when potential spikes are going to be in the program. And so there's a lot of back and forth among our organizations, as well as with the FCC. We probably touch the FCC daily in terms of just informal communications, but also have a standing meeting with the FCC on a regular basis. So in terms of the major players, we're working very closely together. I mean, in terms of a voluntary effort, this is not only historic, but it's just working very well in terms of just all the players in very close communications, sharing the same goal of making sure that no consumer is left behind in February of 2009. We've developed some materials to make this as simple as possible for groups to participate in this consumer education effort. We basically have a turnkey solution. We hired IBM to run the program. They hired Ketchum, the communications firm, to do our consumer education. We now have a toolkit available on the consumer website, dtv2009.gov. If you go under the partners link, there's a whole raft of resources for groups to use so they can communicate with their stakeholders very easily. Let me just give you some examples real quick. We have the how do I get it? Well, let's start with this one. Are you ready for February 2009? So the point here is, you know, helping consumers get beyond the confusion. You know, these are your choices out there. Consumers do have a lot of choices. This is a very exciting transition. And so we have this one-pager, both in English and Spanish, in terms of helping a consumer figure out what their options are. And then, obviously, to take action, that's clearly what we want consumers to do. And so this other guide is, if you decide on the converter box option, here's how you get a coupon, here's how the whole process works. And, again, for me, it was a 90-second process, so very, very quick, very painless. We also have other things like bill stuffers, if you want to put this in a piece of mail. And we are working with other federal agencies to, you know, if there's already a piece of mail going out to constituents, you know, food stamps and information going out to schools or parents, we have an easy stuffer that folks can put into their mailer. So, again, the solution here is use your existing communications channels to get the word out here. We're not asking for folks to reinvent the wheel, spend a ton of resources, invent new communications channels. Just use what you're already using, email, communication that's already going out. It's the no-cost, low-cost solution here. And we think through that mechanism, we're going to be able to touch millions of households, in addition to the billions of impressions that the NAB and NCTA and others are going to make happen over the next year. I think someone has said, I think most consumers are probably going to be sick and tired of the DTV transition by February 2009. That's probably pretty right on. We also have web banners. So as Meredith said earlier, we're very much encouraging members to put our logo up on their website as a web banner. This is the logo and identifier we want consumers to really become very familiar with. So when they get their coupons in the mail, when they go to a retail store, when they go to a website, to see this banner that would link them directly to the website so they can apply for their coupons, or to have them call the toll-free number, please use this to get the word out. It's very easy to put it on your website, very painless, but I think would drive a lot of traffic to the website here. So we also have radio spots. We have all sorts of PSAs, posters, and just all the information and materials to make this as painless as a turnkey solution as possible for groups. As Meredith said, we're beginning to mail coupons out this week. So going beyond consumer education, we're now into consumers going out to get their boxes. The coupon, as you all saw, was very similar to a credit card or a gift card. So consumers are very familiar with this type of card. Again, we want consumers to be familiar with this, so when they get this amongst the raft of junk mail they get, they're not going to throw it into the garbage. They're actually going to identify this and identify this and say, okay, here's my government benefit. I'm good to go. We have over 9,700 retail outlets that are ready with boxes in stores today, and Meredith listed those major retailers. We also have community retailers in the process as well. We have a searchable database online of all these participating retailers keyed to zip code. And so I actually did a search in my old neighborhood and used to live in Los Angeles, and about 20 stores popped up within the radius. I think you can change the radius in terms of 5 miles, 10 miles, 50 miles in terms of participating retailers. And as you saw with the insert that went around, we'll also include in the packet we send out a list of the retailers that are participating that are close to you, as well as the boxes that have been certified. So I think the consumer is going to be armed with all the information they need to know to make sound decisions here over the next year. In terms of the boxes, again, in terms of the consumer choices that are available, here's just an example of a box from, just happen to have the Zenith box here, but we have 39 approved boxes as of 5 minutes ago. This thing is changing so quickly that the choices out there in the marketplace in terms of different price points, different features are pretty remarkable. It's actually exceeded expectations in terms of consumer choice and just this is what we wanted to see with this product and with this program. They're pretty easy to install. I'm not going to say, for all people, they're going to be able to do this in 5 minutes. And that's why we're working with partners to provide information like that quick start guide. CEA put that out. But they also put a video out for consumers to actually see this process in action, how you do this. The Zenith product, and I'm sure there are others, that also right on the box has their toll-free number to call for their hotline. So if you have any questions about the product, the number is actually right here on the box, 1-877-9-ZENITH. So you have that option as well as calling your retailer. So, to me this is about choices and options, which consumers have many of with this program and with this transition. You can also go to digitaltips.org where there are additional resources that the Consumer Electronics Association has put together. And they're very open to doing more, and so it's really a question of, where are the gaps at this point in time that we need to close? We had a very healthy discussion about the low-power community, and we're doing a lot to remedy that situation, but CEA is also stepping up to create more information about the options consumers have, including low-power viewers, to avail themselves of this program. They have many options, and David will talk a little bit more about that as well. Just finally, we, again, encourage all of you to use these materials, to call us, to partner with us. To me, this is about gaps at this point in time over the next year. We have gaps, for example, with homebound seniors, with the senior population, with rural and insular communities, Hispanics, low-income individuals, people with disabilities, and we're working very hard with these communities to have them identify the gaps and also get the information out to their communities because they're the trusted sources. So actually, I spoke on Monday at the American Council of the Blind, and we're having just good conversations with them about, how do you identify this product when it comes in the mail, this coupon insert? What are any visual identifiers you can glean from that might help a blind person? Things you might not think about, but now that we're in dialogue with these vulnerable communities, we understand what we need to do to close these gaps. We've had very good conversations with Debbie and AERP and a lot of the aging organizations and the nursing home agencies to really, again, figure out how we solve these problems. We're in the problem-solving business over the next year for these communities, and I think a focus on them with real solutions using existing information and existing resources that we can mobilize to make this transition a success for all Americans is the way to go. And I'm an optimist, but I think we've got all the strategies and plans in place to make this a very successful transition on February 17, 2009. So thank you very much.
See, that he's in the problem-solving business, Rick. You see how that works? Next, I'd like to turn to David Donovan, the president of MSTV, who's had a long and distinguished career at the FCC and in the broadcast industry. I'd say, personally, he is not only one of the probably leading experts on technical aspects of the transition for broadcasters, but also one of the most well-known, well-liked, and most effective advocates for the broadcast industry in Washington, I think, anyway. So with that, David?
Wow. You never said that when you were saying no to me when you were at the commission.
I always liked you.
But I
didn't do what he said.
But that really is a nice tie, Ken, so I'm really delighted that we're here.
I want to thank Ken for inviting us. I think, as others have discussed, we're in some very, very challenging times for those of us that are in this business. I was happy to see on the issue of communications, it was in, I think it was in this morning's TV Newsday was reported that the number one demographic in terms of knowledge about the digital transition are those 55 and over. So, Deborah, we'll get you that and really, I think, get a raise. I think you guys are doing a heck of a job over there. But I think there are some key points that I want to just touch on and then we can get into detail on these. The first is I think Rick is right in some respects. There is a lot of work to do, but there's a lot of work that has already been done. You do have well over 800 stations that are ready to go right now. And indeed, in some markets, the entire market would be ready to go. There are, though, a number of situations. You have over 600 television stations that are changing channels to get to their final digital television channel. Some of those operate on channels 52 to 69, which, of course, the government has now auctioned, and so you have to find a home for them. Many of them, over 500, are stations that have a digital channel in the UHF band that will be going back to their current analog channel number. So, for example, in this market, WUSA-TV operates its digital channel now on channel 34. It will be going back to channel 9 on February 17, 2009. That's important. Because channel 66, which is the ION station in Manassas in this market, will be using channel 34 for its final digital channel. What's important about that is that we have spent the last year going around just about every state in the union and explaining this. And the broadcasters know full well that there has to be coordination among the stations to effectuate that change. The ION station can't move too early. WUSA can't move too late, or you'll have some interference issues. And so I think that they are clearly prepared for that type of coordination. One of the things, though, that they need, and one of the issues I think that the commission, that we have been at the commission and talked about, is for those stations, a lot of them going back to their analog channels, they want to be able to use their current existing antenna patent. And those issues were decided by the commission. Thank you very much. Around the holidays, that process is working itself out now in terms of individual decisions. And I know right now that the Bureau was working 24/7 to get those issues out. So my plea here is that if you're not involved with the digital transition and if you're with another industry, do not call the Media Bureau. They are busy.
And it is really important, and I'm being facetious, but also just this is just very truthful. Just getting a decision out of the commission on this is just the first step. Because for some stations, depending on what the answer is, they will have to order equipment. And it takes anywhere between 90 to 120 days to get that final transmitter. It takes that long to get a broadcast transmission antenna. And these antennas aren't little things. These are big things. Some of them weigh 15 to 19 tons. They're several stories high. They look little when you're driving past them in upper Wisconsin. But in the parlance of my youth, they are wicked big. And so there is a ton of that stuff that needs to get done. I think we will be able to do it. But I think part of that is to get this to get the process moving and to get those decisions out there so we can get equipment in a timely fashion. And I know the Bureau, and I want to thank, I know Eloise is here, and Lori's here, and Rick is here, and they work very hard over, Thomas, I'm sorry, work very hard over the holidays to try to get that third, what they call the third report in order out. But that is also an issue that we're really going to need to focus on to get those technical solutions out there. And it really is an equipment purchase issue. The second piece is consumer education. I think all of us agree that that needs to be done. And I think as you saw, if you've been following the FCC filings, the National Association of Broadcasters has filed a proposed plan with the FCC regarding consumer education. Earlier, I think if you listen to David Rea, they're talking about a program that's going to cost and is over $1 billion worth of cross-media PR. But as we move forward, they're looking at a plan that speaks in terms of averaging, for example, 16 spots per week, air between 5 and 1 a.m. in the morning, and 25% of those spots being during evening hours. There will be, in addition to that, crawls and snipes, the desire to do a 30-minute program as well. But more importantly, as you get into the last 100 days, the intensity of that program is designed to increase. So we believe, and it's in our, and understand, it is in our best economic interest as broadcasters to get this information out there, and we will do it. So I'm hoping that the consumer education piece will be taken care of. Again, there have been a number of voluntary efforts. Right now, the DTV Transition Task Force has over 200 members, as Tony indicated. Deborah's part of that. I mean, getting the outreach out there to the various groups is critically important. I know that it would be interesting to try to do a test market and to try to do a test market early, and Rick and I have talked about that. There are some potential bumps in the road, though, and particularly if you're a staffer here, is depending on what market's picked, what that means is your analog television would shut off early, and you'd be doing that right during an election year. So if you buy political time on the analog and suddenly this shuts off, there may be some issues there. In addition, with a program that's designed to say all this is going to happen in February, doing it earlier may cause some problems. But having said that, I mean, we fully understand the concern here. And as I said, I've said to Rick, otherwise let's try to work together to see if we can try to make sure that we have sufficient information that if things need to be corrected, that they can get corrected, because I think that is an important issue. One of the issues that has cropped up in the last couple of days, and I just want to spend a little time on, is DTV reception. The New York Times gave some ink to a study that said, oh, we're going to have trouble getting reception outside of 30 miles. There's one sort of basic fundamental principle. I love props. This was at the Museum of Modern Art. As a basic general proposition, if you get analog signals today, you will get them with the exact digital signals with the exact same antenna post-transition. So if this is what you're using to get analog, this is what you'll use to get digital. There are some subtle issues, and Rick raised one of them. A number of stations right now on channels 2 through 5 are not going back to the VHF band. They're going back to the UHF band.
And the reason for that, believe it or not, is that there is a lot more interference in the lower VHF bands, and digital signals are susceptible. The manifestation of interference is greater. The picture freezes, and the sound goes out, which is why we're concerned about TV white space devices, and I will conclude with that because I had to get that in. But here's the issue that Rick raised. If you have a set, your VHF signals come over the dipoles, these straight dipoles. Your UHF signals are in the loop. So when you change from a low V channels 2 to 4, if you have a loop, you should be able to pick up the digital station that is now in the UHF band. Remember, though, 500 of the digital stations that are now broadcasting temporarily in the UHF band are going back to the VHF band, so they will get picked up with this. So as a general proposition, whatever you're using today to receive analog signals, you'll be able to use it in the future to get digital. Now, there are going to be some subtleties and there are going to be variations, but I think as a general proposition that is correct. I brought in, let me just point him out, Bruce Franca, who is former chief of the of OET at the FCC. He's here as the Engineering Truth Squad to make sure that I get this right. So I want to... Bruce, did I do that? Is that okay? So far, so good. All right. I get yelled at if I get this wrong. Now, let me just mention just briefly the study that said we're going to have trouble getting service after outside of 30 miles. What that study did is it went to the antenna web that you can see that CEA has out there, and it picked two types of antenna, a small outdoor and a medium outdoor antenna. And then it went on the antenna web, and it punched in and said, oh, the antenna web says you need a large antenna to receive this. Therefore, I'm going to conclude that you can't get digital service. That methodology is just fundamentally wrong. If I go on to an antenna web now, where I live in Fairfax Station, and I punch in antenna web, it says I need a large antenna, not only to get digital, but to get analog. In other words, the same antenna I used to get analog is the same antenna I'm going to use to get digital. The second thing is that the database that AntennaWeb uses are the broadcaster's temporary digital channels and power. It's not based on the final digital channels and power. And as everyone in the room, well, maybe they don't know, in August, the FCC, of course, is lifting the freeze, and stations will be applying for maximization at that point. And also, stations are going back and will be allowed, hopefully, to use their analog antenna patents. So the methodology in the database upon which that analysis is based, quite candidly, is just not there yet. So I think we'll probably have a continuing debate. I'm not saying that in all cases you won't need to get a different antenna or you won't need to reorient it. But as a general proposition, it is incorrect to say you're not going to get digital outside of 30 miles. And you'll be able to use the same antenna. In fact, studies that we did, actually measuring signal strength, which the Centris study didn't do, and it was reported in the Washington Post a couple of years ago, says that you can get great digital service even further out. So I think in terms of that sort of interference gap, I think that that's probably problematic. I will talk later, and we can get into question and answers about the low-power TV issue, and in particular the converter box bypass. I won't spend a lot of time on that right now. We'll probably want to get into that in questions. I will finish just with one piece, though. Analog, when you got interference, you know, when your father did his high-speed drill, or your mother put on the hairdryer, or you'd yell at your little sister, or you'd get your brother to hold the antenna just way so all the ghosts would go away. That a lot of that is in digital. It is more susceptible, the manifestation of it, to interference caused by other devices radiating in the band, which is why we have been very aggressive and will continue to be aggressive on placing unlicensed devices in the band. This transition is not going to end on February 19, 2009. We're talking about consumer acceptance of a new technology. And if you wake up in March or into June of 2009 and suddenly your boxes don't work because of interference, that's going to be a problem. And I think as some of you have been following the recent recent lab tests over at the FCC, Microsoft has withdrawn one of their devices, boxes, because it failed like it did last summer. Infocom Research, which was submitting two boxes, both those boxes don't work. So the track record here, I think, is a cause for concern. I don't spend we can talk about that later if you want, but it is an issue that is part of consumer acceptance of digital technology. And I'll end with that.
Thanks, David. So in addition to a converter box, do I need a new antenna for this as well? Will this antenna work, you think? Bruce, will this antenna work?
You may need a UHF loop. If you can get a UHF station on that now, you'll be okay.
I think I have to throw this thing out, basically, at that point. Well, if Deborah will indulge me for just a second, I think because Rick and David both made reference to ongoing FCC proceedings that need to get resolved. Can I just ask the professional experts from the FCC, how do you feel about it? Are we going to get these things done? Is that going to be a problem, a holdup in the thing? Eloise, do you want to say something? Oh, I guess we're recording this, so we need to get a microphone to you also. Sorry for the brief interruption before your interview here.
Well, I didn't know I was going to be called upon, but that's okay.
Well, I didn't know you were going to be here.
That's true. Ken's my former boss and one of the best bosses there ever was, so just want to say that.
Go on. Really?
Well,
really, go on.
I know. As David said, we did finish up what we call the third periodic review, which really laid out all the ground rules on a going-forward basis for the application process and the interference process, talked about when we're likely to be lifting the freeze. And so that's all done. That's finished, thank goodness. What a way to spend New Year's Eve. And for those folks who were reading it after New Year's Eve, so that part is done. And we did take care of the new DTV, the final DTV table of allotments last fall. But there were some petitions for reconsideration that David was alluding to, some folks that wanted to have some changes made in their what we call Appendix B, which is the listing of the facilities. And so I believe the chairman has already said, so I'm okay saying that that's on circulation now, just the recons. There were a few recons, petitions for reconsideration, and so that's on circulation now. So we're actually in very good shape, and we're beginning to get the applications coming in for building these additional facilities that need to be built or for modifications to existing facilities. So that's going along, and we're hoping to get some more of those. We have an expedited time frame for those if they want to file within that time period. And then we have the what we affectionately call the RIC form, the Form 387. That is the form where the stations are going to – every station, every full power station is required to file this form with us next week to let us know their status. And those are, as I say, due next week. And so we're going to be looking at those, reviewing those, and we're going to be preparing a report on what that shows. Stations not only need to file them next week, but they have a continuing obligation to update us on the forms, so where they're not, if they're reporting anything other than I'm done, they need to come back and say what's going on, what's taking time or what isn't taking time, whatever they need to let us know, if they have a problem, if they have an issue, or just to keep us posted. So we're going to be tracking everything really closely that way. And, as we've also said, we know how many forms we're supposed to get. Anybody we don't hear from, we're going to be reaching out to them and say, you know, yoo-hoo, hello, there's a DTV transition going on, and we want to make sure that we get your form and know that you're okay. So we really feel very much on top of it, but I really appreciate David saying, don't call the Media Bureau unless you have a DTV question.
It's okay. It's absolutely not
called the Media Bureau. Okay. Thank you, Eloise. Finally, we have Deborah Berlin, who is president of Consumer Policy Solutions and a consultant to AARP on the digital television transition. Deborah probably doesn't remember this, but I actually interviewed for a job with her probably 15 years ago. That's how long it's been, and we've both changed jobs many times in the interim. But I'm really pleased that she agreed to speak today on sort of the consumer perspective of the digital television transition. So, Deborah?
And I'm pleased that PFF has landed such an able leader. So it's great to be here. Thank you for including AARP's perspective in this panel discussion. I want to hit upon a few things today. And I think piggybacking on what Rick talked about, I want to synthesize what we see to be the three steps in this transition. And the first step is awareness. And while we recognize that awareness has dramatically increased over the past year or so, we also have seen some surveys that show that consumers are still confused. And I'm sure if any of us use this for cocktail banter, you yourselves may have experienced that when you ask someone, when they ask you what you're doing and you say you're working on the digital television transition, people have heard about it. But the questions you get are, well, what do I do about my cable? Is that going to stop working? Do I need high definition television? And in fact, I've heard some people who are even working on this occasionally call it HD TV. So there is confusion out there, but awareness is increasing. Secondly, it's important that consumers know what they need to do in their own household. As part of that, we want to make sure that consumers don't buy unnecessary equipment and that they don't walk out of a store that may be 10 miles away, get home, and realize they need an extra cable or a switcher or something in order to continue to watch the shows that they have been watching. And finally, and most importantly, consumers need to take action. And AARP is working on figuring out ways that we can all help each other through this process. We have this very simple message that's on a bookmark that we handed out starting in September at a member event that AARP held. And the messages here are, you know, check your own household stats and see what you need. Request coupons if you need them. But here are two bullets that we think are really important. And one is help a neighbor make the transition. And the next one is spread the word with friends and family. And what we found is in talking to a number of people, they'll say, oh, I got cable. I'm all set. Well, what about your parents? What about your aunt? What about a neighbor next door? What can you do to help them? So I'll pass these out afterwards. But that's part of our message as well. Well, what has AARP been doing? As far as awareness goes, we had articles in our AARP magazine. AARP has over 30 million members, and the magazine goes to every household that is a member of AARP. It's over 25 million households. We also have put an article in an English-Spanish bilingual magazine that AARP produces called Segunda Juventud. That goes to about 1.5 million households. And finally, AARP has a bulletin that goes to the same number of households as the magazine. Starting in October of 2007, we have included something about the DTV transition in each issue, sort of a countdown of sorts. We hope that that's been helping to raise awareness, and as David mentioned, it's not surprising that the 55-plus community, or AARP's membership, 50-plus community, may have the greatest awareness of the transition because they pay attention, they listen to the messaging, and then they worry. So they hear it, they know it, and then they go, oh, my God, what am I going to do? We also have started to work with all of our state network, and AARP has a state office in every state. And we have sent out information to the state offices, and they are starting to get involved in their community within their own state on this issue. As I mentioned, we did we were present at an AARP member event, which brought in 50,000 AARP members in September. We'll do that again next September. We worked with NTIA and the FCC in presenting information about DTV there. It's on our website, which we are always in the process of updating, make sure we have the most up-to-date information. We're also working in collaboration with many other aging organizations, and I want to comment and talk a little bit more about that in just a minute. We have a program called TaxAid. We have volunteers who work with households that have difficulty in filing their own taxes and understanding it and doing the work, and we have volunteers who actually sit down and help them, particularly at this time of year, and they will have access to the DTV information and will distribute that. We also work very closely with an organization called Faith in Action. Faith in Action has volunteers in communities around the country that go into the home of older Americans and those who are homebound, and they do simple tasks for them. They may help them with sending out bills. They may pick up a prescription for them, but they're sort of a helper, a friend, and we are working on informing those volunteers, and then we want to take it to the next step and actually help them provide the hands-on assistance. Finally, we are raising awareness about possible scams that consumers could confront with this DTV transition. We know whenever there's an opportunity, there's a cottage industry in scamming individuals, and particularly older individuals, and so we are concerned about that, and we continually want to raise the possibility that someone could try and take some of your money in this transition that you don't need to spend. So something like offering to install a box for someone and charging some outrageous amount of money, offering to sell a coupon, which we know they're not supposed to do, but offer a box at a high rate. All of those things are things that we're keeping an eye out for and informing the members about what they need to watch out for. Now, as far as helping consumers know what they need to do, that's the second step here. I think raising awareness through the ads on TV, it gives people the message, there's a transition, it's happening, I think I know the date is sometime next year. But then they need to figure out, what do I need to do in my home? And I think that then we have to get the message out to the local community. As Meredith was mentioning before, she did a presentation, and she was able to get questions from individuals. And I think that really helps. If consumers are able to hear it from someone and ask a question, telephone helplines, checklists. So I know we've talked about it. I'm not sure if an organization has put together a simple checklist that you could take and look in your home and check the box. Is every TV connected to cable? Bottom line is, you don't need a converter box. That type of thing will be helpful in determining what you actually need in your home. Finally, the third step about taking action, how can we help the most vulnerable households, individuals, make this DTV transition? As Rick mentioned, it's more than just getting the box, hooking it up. There's some other element of this that is a big challenge for older Americans. Very simple. There's a physical challenge involved. Yes, it's understanding how to actually install the box. And you can have all the diagrams in the world, but if you're an 85-year-old person living on your own and your TV, your 40-pound TV is in a cabinet, you're going to have a really tough time installing that box. So it's not just having a diagram and knowledge. It's also doing the physical step of making that happen. And that will be more difficult for some individuals than others. AARP, as I mentioned, has been collaborating with other aging organizations. And part of that effort is to figure out the resources that are needed to accomplish that third step, to go into the community, to help train volunteers that are already trusted volunteers in a particular household. You may have heard, let's train Boy Scouts, for example, to go into the home and install the box. In some cases, that may work. But again, if you're older, I'm not so sure we would even want someone to open their door to a 16-year-old that they don't know. I think we really need to have people that they trust and they already have a relationship with entering their home to help with this transition. So the aging organizations are looking for help. Programs like Meals on Wheels, for example, that have volunteers that go into the home are very concerned about those consumers that they serve getting cut off from their television service. So we didn't mention it, but it's obvious how important television is in the home to someone who is homebound, someone who is older, and they're very concerned about cutting off that service. They want to help, but it's going to take resources. Some of these organizations don't have funds to even copy the wonderful information that the government has provided. So those groups need some help, and we're all working. That the program as it currently exists doesn't necessarily help every single household in this country, that there are some that will get left out, that there's a bit of a gap. And as Tony said, that they're in the problem-solving business, then we're a good team, Tony, because we've sort of been in the problem-raising business.
I think Rick's in that business, too.
So we need to close gaps in the program that leave some vulnerable consumers out. Tony mentioned that we've been working on the problem of how do we help individuals in nursing homes, in group homes, perhaps in some assisted living centers where those individuals don't qualify to get a coupon, and yet some of them do have their own TV sets in their room. And, of course, many of those are older sets. So we're working with NTIA and the other aging organizations to come up with some solutions. And, again, we need to work to protect consumers from any scams and frauds that could develop out there. So thank you. Frauds that could develop out there. So thank you.
Thanks, Deborah. So before I go to sort of my prepared questions, does anybody on the panel have any desire to react to anything that anybody else has said? And you went last, so you probably already had your chance. But does anybody?
The only thing I'd mention is that in this idea of, and I know it's been debated back and forth, is that if you have all your sets connected to cable, do you still need to convert a box or what have you? For what it's worth, I know that just from personal experience with my mother, who is still gnawing at my ankles 24/7, but. Or during Katrina, what we found is that one of the things during emergency situations, be they hurricanes or what have you, the alternate delivery systems tend to go out. Your wind will blow away the dish or flood the cable systems. And a lot of folks turn to off-air TV at that time, particularly WWL, which stayed in the air. Its tower, unlike the police communications towers, they put their tower above the sea level. So they stayed on the air and continued to broadcast. So there is an emergency component to this, that even if those people are connected to other systems, they tend to go out first. And the off-air TV, because it's not wired and its receiving equipment is generally much smaller inside the house. So there is, I think for emergency situations, there is an issue here that just to be considered, but I understand the grand scheme of things. It's probably not the
Tony.
Yeah, I think we were remiss in not talking about the low power issue. That obviously is a very important issue for us. Not everyone's going to transition. Not every station is going to transition in February of 2009. There's a whole class of low power, Class A, and translator stations. In these communities are going to continue to receive analog broadcasts past February of 2009. And we've been working very closely with this community and have several solutions. First of all, we have a couple of grant programs, but not only is the coupon program funded through the DFA, but also a couple of grant programs to help these communities transition to digital with assistance in getting digital technology. These stations want to transition. They don't want to be left behind, and so we're helping them do that as quickly as possible. Secondly, we have identified the what are called the analog pass-through boxes and made that very clear to folks that there are certain boxes that will pass through the analog signal so that folks will, in those communities, can continue to get their analog stations while they can also use the box to decode the digital stations. And so those boxes are ready-made for those folks. But also, and probably defer to my good friend David here. You can also use just like a $10 splitter as well on any of our 39 boxes that have been certified, so that folks watching low power can use that splitter to get their analog stations, also get the digital stations using the box, any of our boxes. So there are a lot of choices out there, and that's what we're trying to convey, even to the low power folks. We're very attentive to their issues and believe we have identified some very clear solutions. Have all this information now on the main page of our DTV 2009 website for this community. And again, the insert that'll go out to consumers will identify and flag with an asterisk those boxes that are especially useful for the low-power community.
David, did you want to say something about low-power before we go on? Before I pass this on to Cassandra here to do some more gloom and doom.
That's how you treat your people who accept it.
You're just trying to resolve what he started, right?
That's the problem. Cleaning up after the free plan.
No, the low power issue I think is one which the broadcast industry is very much aware of. It is a multi-layered problem. Let me give you an example. This would affect both low power and translator stations who are not subject to the 2009 deadline. Now, if you go out into very rural areas where there are translators, and I think I saw some data from BIA about 1,000 that are in areas that are out, that are in market in communities that aren't in your markets where there are full powered stations. In those very rural areas, if that translator doesn't transition, and it doesn't have to, you don't need a box at all. You continue to use your analog sets. And so in those areas, that really shouldn't be an issue. The problem is where you have your low-power stations that are in the same market as full-power stations. And that's where this issue comes in. It gets into issues as to how many Class A and low-power TV viewers there are. And the solutions, the technical solutions, are really a couple of fold. The first is to have a box that, because by statute, this box was designed to say digital to analog. So you have a box that has a switch inside that when you turn this off, you have an antenna connected to it. The antenna connects to this box. Since this antenna can get both digital and analog signals, the viewer simply turns their TV set onto their LPTV station. The analog tuner in the existing set still works, and they will be able to get LPTV. And that's what basically what the pass-through does. Now, if a box doesn't have a pass-through, you take this lead, you get one of these, which is maybe a buck or two, and it's a splitter. And it becomes an external splitter. You put this on the antenna. You take one lead, run it through your converter box into your set. You take the other lead, you run it around the box, and you put it into the back of your set. And you can continue to see LPTV stations as well.
Do you have to turn the box on and off?
At this point with the splitter, you'd have to turn the box off. And that's the difference. And that's, I understand that from our standpoint, we deal with this every day, it may sound very easy to do. And it is very easy to set up in terms of costs and what have you. But I think where NTIA is going is that the goal is to try to get more boxes out there that have essentially this splitter built into the box. Yes, sir.
Ted Hearn has it.
When you use the splitter.
Wait, Ted. I'm sorry. Can you just wait 1 second? So, because we are recording this, I want to get you on the mic. You're on record.
I'll talk about it later.
Right. No, go ahead.
When you have the splitter working,
right,
and you have the one connection going to the back of the TV,
right,
and then another going to the back of the box,
right, correct,
then the box has to connect to the TV.
Correct.
Where is I have one connection on the back of my TV, not two.
Well, but most sets that have been built certainly in the last 20 years have two connections in the back.
That's where you can go.
And for those that only have one connection in the back,
jack, for the cable.
Yeah, you got
two of those.
You got your yellow, red, and blue connections. That works just as well.
So
exactly.
RCA.
Right.
call it.
Right. Now, if you've got a set that's older than 20 years, what you would do is once you bring this around, you take up, you take another splitter, and you, then you feed it back, so you're only using the one. But for most folks, that the move around will work.
So, gee, I was hoping we'd run out of time, but unfortunately, well, Rick, you have something else you want to say?
I have a couple concerns that don't want to disappoint you. One is, David raised the issue of people who are served only by translators, only in an area where they're translators, and they're, so those translators may not be turning off their analog. Right. And I would be concerned if the message to them is, you don't need a converter box, because eventually they will. Right. Eventually these translators are going to go digital. And the problem is that this converter box program expires in 2009, early 2009. And I'm concerned that at the end of the day, these people, you know, when it's time for them to transition, will show up and say, hey, where are my coupons? And they'll get the answer, well, sorry, that program ran out. That was for the other people in the country, and you don't get it.
Our message is that there's only one coupon program, so you better avail yourselves now. Yeah,
so I guess the idea is that they should put this on the shelf for a couple years, but if they want to get them. Neil.
If you didn't have a coupon left and it were 3 years from now, how much do you think the boxes would cost without a coupon?
I don't know. I think between the actual casing and the IP rights, is it going to come back?
It'll probably come down.
What are the boxes?
Will they produce them anymore? That's the question.
What do the boxes sell for today without a coupon? What's the price of a box?
$40 to $70.
$40 to $70.
And whether or not they'll actually be produced in 3 years, that's another issue. The other thing, go ahead.
No. Rick raises a point, and that really is a point that goes to the coupon program. I guess I will view it from a perspective of whether or not things have to be stopped in order to fix something between now and 2009. And all I'm saying is that for those folks who live in those rural areas, there is not a problem between now and February 17th, 2009. There may be some additions that have to be made to the coupon program later, but at least in terms of getting through the transition, that is not an immediate issue between now and 2009.
I just wouldn't discourage them from getting
coupons. That's a fair point.
Other thing, I wonder, I don't want to wade into this reception issue, mm-hmm. but besides the VHF antenna issue,
right.
I do wonder about whether in analog people are putting up with reception. I mean, we talk about, well, gee, if you go to Antenna Web, this is the antenna you're supposed to get, the mm-hmm. outdoor one that gets the fancy.
Right.
I think especially on second and third sets in the house, you know, if it's up in the bedroom or something, I think people, even if they live in an area where they're supposed to have this outdoor wonderful
right.
antenna that does it, I'm worried that they actually are putting up with snow and they've got just a regular set-top box antenna, if that, to get reception, and that in those cases they may actually need a new antenna. And I guess if you see the actual experience over in the UK that they report is that about 10% of people need a new antenna. And, you know, it's another thing
right.
that a test market would be very useful to tell us exactly what do people have, what don't they have, what problems do they have. That's what
I think you can do. You could.
That's a solution, Ken.
You could
duly noted.
You can conduct reception tests now because most stations are up and running right now, so you can get a feel for that. I think the difference is essentially this. I really need a graph to draw this out, but essentially, you have an analog antenna, an analog system, and like most of us, it degrades gracefully in engineering. As we get older, we degrade, which means you start with a picture, and then it gets snowy, 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 snowy to blizzard conditions, and you can't watch it anymore. With digital, the first analog will dip this way. Digital, you'll go perfect, and you'll go out further with a perfect picture than you will in analog. At some point, you'll hit the end, and it'll drop. But what that means geographically is that you will get more people will get a better picture over a further distance. What you lose, if you lose, is sort of the last tail way out where you get, frankly, a picture that in analog most folks wouldn't watch because it really is a blizzard condition out there. It's just all snowy. So that's kind of the trade-off. That will be sort of an individual case. If you live on the side of a mountain, it may be better for you than if you live in a valley and there's a mountain in between. But that's not to say we shouldn't do reception tests. I'm not saying that. But I think I'm not so sure that the situation that occurred in Britain, which has a different digital system, that lesson is necessarily applicable here.
Deborah, you wanted to add something
about
so far?
I just wanted to add the consumer message in here about the low-powered TV situation, and that's that what we want to make sure of is that consumers understand this transition. And so, you know, we're talking about more and more confusion and more confusing messages, and somehow we have to convey what certain segments of the population need and don't need in a clear fashion. And so our caution is just to, you know, figure out how we communicate about this, how we give those who don't need to worry about it confidence that they don't have to get down in the weeds, and those who do need to know about it clear information and assistance.
So let me pick up on that for 1 minute, because Tony said something that interested me about consumers sort of being deluged with this information, being sick and tired of the message by the end. And so in my typically provocative way, I would ask, you know, is there a risk of sort of over-promoting this whole thing, that if we, you know, there's sort of a power of suggestion, right? If we put out messages that, you know, toasters are going to fail in February 2009, I bet you we'd wake up and find that there are a surprising number of toasters being reported failing in February of 2009. So we tell people you're going to be inconvenienced in February of 2009. Aren't we sort of creating the inconvenience itself at that point?
Well, I think it's about, as we get closer to 2009, it'll be about the pockets that were, you know, the people that are in the communities that are, you know, getting the analog now barely, and you may not get the digital or may need to do some tweaks, or the people that are homebound that may need some additional assistance, or the insular communities that do need the message. I agree with Debbie that either what kind of box they need to continue to get the low power, whether they need a box at all. So I think we're going to get down to some pockets of communities in a really big country, so it's hard to compare this to UK. Very heterogeneous, very geographically diverse. We're going to get some folks on the fringes that we really need to focus our attention on, and we're already doing that. The mainstream, I think, are going to get these messages. David Rear said up to 600-plus times they're going to hear about this transition. That's just through NAB, not to mention, and we've already gotten about 400 million impressions through the media about the Converter Box program. So to me, it's going to be about these small percentage of the population that we need to do some special outreach to.
Any risk of over-promotion?
We've heard this comparison before to Y2K, but that's exactly what we want. You know, by that December 31st, people were oversaturated with information and concerned and worried, and then on January 1st, it was nothing happened. And that's the sort of, I think, goal we have here, is we want people to get oversaturated with information about this, because there will be a certain segment of the population that will hear this message over and over again and will not take action. So we have to keep that message going out there. And so if 80-90% of the people say, oh, Tony, it's November of 08, I've heard enough about DTV. We know that there's another person out there who has not heard enough about DTV. So I think we saturate, we make sure that everybody knows about it, and expectations could be huge that maybe, you know, people will be left without television, and let's hope it's a Y2K and they won't.
Okay.
You don't know. You don't know what I'm going to say. You think, Cena. All right. It is like Y2K. I mean, it is like one of those situations where you're not going to do it exactly right. It's going to be either too little or too much, and you'd better err on the side of doing too much. And, you know, you don't want to repeat the same message over and over again. I mean, it's true. You know, once you get to awareness, though, you know, we got to move on to those other, you know, what do people do? There's a lot of messages that have to get out there explaining why to people this is happening. I think that's a message that has not yet really gotten out there. And a lot of the first questions some people ask is, why is this happening? Why is the government doing this? And sort of explaining to people about what the benefits of digital TV are and what they need to do to protect themselves. Is we have a long way to go on those messages.
Great. Okay. Anne, you had a question also. Can you?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
I have two questions. One, that survey seems like it would be a very useful tool in identifying which stations are the broadcaster survey, which stations could have problems and which wouldn't. Is that information, is there a deadline for finishing that?
Yeah, it's a Form 387. It's due in a couple of next week.
It's due next week. It'll be made public. It'll be available,
and that will be available
on
available?
The Internet, on the FCC website.
I think one thing, though, with that, and it does tie into here, is that that is a status report of where things are now.
Right.
There are, for a lot of stations, some addition, because you're dealing with this on a case-by-case decisional basis at the Commission. Stations where they are today may not be where they are a couple of months from now or by February 17, 2009. So a station reporting at power X with an antenna height of X, that may change, it most likely will change on February 17, 2009. So that's why sort of these interim reception reports are not quite accurate.
But they will be updated as things materially
exactly.
change. They're supposed to update
correct.
Them. So
I think that's a lot of the concern in Congress. That, you know, just regular consumer isn't going to know whether it's a low-power signal
normally
or a regular,
right.
and that information. My second question is the proposed task force, the request to the White House. If such a thing would be created, you guys are on the ground working. Would that be helpful or not? Would it add new players? Could it potentially increase coordination?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've already said I've said that it would tremendously help coordination.
Does everyone agree that could be potentially helpful?
We're already working with over 20 federal agencies and working with them kind of individually because everyone has a little bit of a different, we've got to customize this to each agency and you know, figuring out what types of information they need, when they need it, how they need it. So that's working pretty well, actually, to date. And we're working very closely with the private sector through the DTV Coalition. Again, we touch the FCC daily. So I think there's a lot of activity out there and a lot of coordination to date.
Now, I would say yes, definitely. It would be helpful. I think that various agencies of government have resources, and I think NTIA is starting to tap some of that, but I think a real formal coordinated effort will take advantage of some of the resources that individual agencies have and the communications that they regularly have with various constituencies.
I think it's not just the coordination, but also accountability and authority that this task force would then have the authority to sort of coordinate things. It wouldn't just be a we're just in communication, and we could actually help shape the way things happen.
Okay, we're quickly running out of time. We'll take some questions from the audience here. This gentleman in the back first.
We talked a little bit about the emergency response ramifications, and I was just wondering if I could ask quickly what the why is for DTV. What motivates the switch?
Well,
there's several reasons. One
is that good enough for you?
One is the spectrum. It's more efficient. Government will, at the end of the day, the 700 megahertz band, the 108 megahertz will be returned to the government for public safety and the new commercial uses that are being offered up right now. It's also improved service for Americans. Digital is better. Digital permits you to do high definition, multicasting, all sorts of new interactive services. And I think the third is we want to preserve broadcasting in the digital world. And as Marty Franks once said, it's hard to imagine that as the world goes digital, that broadcasting will remain a sea amongst the... No.
An island.
Oh, yes, right. An analog island amongst the digital... Thank you. I forgot what it was. It was very poetic.
It was supposed to be a win-win-win.
There are a couple other benefits of digital and very germane to NTIA's mission, which is public safety. We're freeing up part of the spectrum that's no longer needed because digital is more efficient and providing it to our nation's first responders. This is part of the 9/11 Commission recommendation to get better spectrum in the hands of our first responders. So that's, we've actually tested that message with consumers, and once they understand why this is happening, they're much more accepting of something that otherwise looks kind of arbitrary. That, not only that, but we're auctioning off, I think those auctions are underway now, part of that spectrum to for next generation wireless broadband services. So we're getting better technology in the hands of consumers down the road. So there's tons of good reasons why this is happening. And when consumers become aware of that, they're much, much more willing to pay $5 or $10 out of pocket for a better experience.
Although I want, if consumers are really, you know, if you tell them public safety and advanced wireless users, they really want to know what's in it for them, ultimately. So I think focusing on the improved services, and even with this converter box, they're going to get multicasting and some other services that they don't get now, is more appealing, I think, when you're talking to consumers.
Just to put a fine point on it, nearly a third of the broadcast spectrum that's used now is being returned to the government for auction bid for public safety. I mean, that's over 100 megahertz of, 108 megahertz of spectrum that's going back. And either in terms of general revenues or interoperability systems for public safety, I think public safety is getting 24 megahertz, four TV channels in effect are being turned over completely for public safety interoperability. But no other communication service actually is giving up essentially that much spectrum, becoming more efficient in using less. So this is a significant change.
It actually was a clever but subtle part of the economic stimulus package, because we're going to force people to go out and buy all this new equipment. They can't save this check. This coupon is not savable. Right? They got to go out and spend.
Yes, spend.
So.
Thank you.
This gentleman had a question.
It was just something that was kind of crossing my mind. Tony, did you say there are already 70 boxes certified?
We have 39 boxes 39. Certified as of 2 hours ago. It might be more now.
Well,
so we have quite a few products out there potentially in the marketplace.
I was trying to think of it from the consumer standpoint. Deborah's people, you get them through the stress of having to convert. You get them through the stress of getting a thing. And then they go into Best Buy, and they just look at this wall of boxes.
No, it's probably like Best Buy's only going to have their own branded box, Insignia box. We're working with both retailers and manufacturers so that, for example, they would identify on the package that this is coupon eligible. Also, we're working with folks so like Radio Shack wants to work with us in getting this sort of stuff in stores so people can... We're going to have visual cues, so the Debbie's folks are.
And me too. I don't want to have to choose among 39. So.
So you mean Best Buy is only having one?
Basically the same as well, and I think what we're going to see, but Tony knows best in terms of what the retailers are going to do, is that various different boxes are going to be in different stores. So Radio Shack may have, you know, its two or three boxes,
right.
And Best Buy will have.
Some may only be available online through different vendors. So the point here is that with this competition, I mean, that's why you're seeing now the $40 box, maybe that'll even get lower. The lower the price, the more coupons we can get out there. So this is a win-win for consumers and for the government.
So Best Buy only carries Insignia?
Right now, they're only that's their branded box. So,
they won't carry one of the analog pass-through boxes?
They may.
Right now, they're not.
Start over here on the side. We'll work our way back. Okay, anywhere you want.
I was just...
You gave him the malfunctioning microphone. Is it working?
Okay. Yeah, there we go. I was just wondering whether the boxes were Energy Star, if you're part of that program.
Yeah, that's a permitted feature, and we certainly encourage that. This one happens to be Energy Star, the Zenith product. I'm not sure how many are, but we strongly encourage that.
Okay, I was just wondering if the trial program that was done in D.C. was going to, any results were going to be made public in terms of who was responding, how they were finding out about the program.
Yeah, we do have a pilot underway, actually just finished up in D.C. and actually in Wichita, Kansas, for the converter box program. We were largely testing not only the consumer experience, but that the whole coupon payment and redemption process, because the retailer is basically fronting the money that they then get reimbursed through the Treasury. So we wanted to make sure that process worked, and it did work very effectively. But also the consumer experience. I know the Best Buy experience was very positive, and both Best Buy and Walmart have now put out publicly that they've trained all their personnel and are ready to help consumers in stores understand the product, which is why we had them certified in the first place, is that we don't want retailers out there that can't support the product, that don't understand. They may not know everything that David knows, but they can at least help folks understand what they need to continue to enjoy their television experience.
But that information will be readily available.
Everything we do is made public. You know that.
So we are quickly running out of time, and I want to get you all out of here. Let me ask one final wrap-up question, the one that always keeps me awake at night, and that is the political question that we will have in February of 2009, a new president, a new Congress, the leadership of the FCC and NTIA will be in flux at that point. What are the chances you think that something happens to delay the or defer the transition? We'll go in reverse order this time. I'll let you take the first crack at that, Deborah.
Well, from a consumer standpoint, from an organization working to help consumers' perspective, we are just heading towards that deadline date of February 17th with no expectation that that deadline would change.
David?
I think from our perspective, from a business planning perspective and corporate planning and strategies, you know, February 17th is the goal, and that's what we're aiming for. It will get hard because it's tough to climb towers in the middle of February in Minnesota, but that's what we're aiming for. And that's certainly, I don't anticipate any changes.
Yeah, any changes probably from here on out would, you know, very likely have unintended consequences. You know, I'd be real careful in tinkering around with the programs we have in place because they've been built up over now years. We have vendors in place where we have plans and processes in place to see this thing get carried out between now and 09. And so I think we're on the right track. And so look, be real careful about anything you want to change from here on out because it's probably going to end up biting you.
Go ahead.
All right. No, I don't think there's going to be any changes in that date, but it makes it all the more important that we get it right over the next few months. Go ahead.
Sorry, I have a message to add to that. Well, we have no expectation that the date would change, and we're working towards that February 17th date. We need to make sure that there is really good oversight into how the program is doing and how consumers are doing what they need to do at home. As we get close to that date, we may need to take some last-minute actions to ensure that everybody stays connected.
Okay, well, it sounds like the momentum is there, and it's going to happen, so the countdown begins. Thank you all for coming. Appreciate you being here. Well, thank you.
Hey, how are you doing?